In today's news headlines, President Donald Trump on Sunday dropped yet another bombshell on Twitter, this time incriminating his own son in the matter over the infamous Trump Tower meeting in 2016. In his tweet, Trump wrote, "This was a meeting to get information on an opponent, totally legal and done all the time in politics, and it went nowhere. I did not know about it." In admitting that the goal of the meeting was to get dirt on Hillary Clinton ahead of the election, Mr. Trump has implied that his son and or other campaign staffers and advisors present at the meeting with a Russian lawyer may have broken the law. According to the Federal Election Commission, there is, quote, a broad prohibition on foreign national activity in connection with elections in the United States. One reporter writing in Axios called Trump's tweet, quote, one of the most striking public reversals in modern presidential history. The New York Times reported people close to the president believe that he may be increasing his legal jeopardy by continuing to speak publicly about sensitive matters, even as his campaign is under investigation for possible collusion with Russia, and he himself is under scrutiny for possible obstruction of justice. One of Trump's attorneys also changed his tune in an appearance on ABC on Sunday. Jay Sekulow had asserted last July that the president had no role in a letter that his son wrote to the New York Times about the Trump Tower meeting. Since then, it has emerged through Trump's own people that Trump dictated the letter. Mr. Sekulow on Sunday said he had made a mistake last year when he claimed the president wasn't involved.
Well, let me tell you two things on that one. Number one, as you know, George, I was in the case at that point, what, a couple of weeks, and there was a lot of information that was gathering. And as my colleague Rudy Giuliani said, I had bad information at that time. I made a mistake in my statement. I've talked about that before. That happens when you have cases like this. As far as when did we correct it, the important part is the information that we've shared with the Office of Special Counsel. I'm not going to get into the details, but we were very clear as to the situation involving that trip and the statements that were made to the New York Times. So I think it's very important to point out that in a situation like this, you have, over time, facts develop. That's what investigations do.
That was one of Trump's lawyers, Jay Sekulow, on ABC on Sunday explaining how, quote, over time facts develop. A rally by armed white supremacist Trump supporters in Portland, Oregon on Saturday was a site of violence after police lobbed flashbang grenades at the counter-protesters that had gathered there. Hundreds of members of the hate groups Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer gathered in Portland and were met with Portland residents, including anti-fascist activists. Independent media outlet Unicorn Riot captured the police violence on Saturday.
Pan out for a second, if you can. Oh, okay. Get that.
Do it.
Over here. The police are firing tons of flashbangs into the crowd. They've only attacked the anti-racist protests. They haven't attacked the anti-immigrant group.
On the sidewalk.
Those were some of the sounds of violence from police aimed at anti-fascist protesters at a white supremacist gathering in Portland, Oregon on Saturday. The 400 or so armed Trump supporters were outnumbered by about 1,000 counter-protesters. Police, who have come under strong criticism for their one-sided actions in favor of the white supremacists, arrested 4 people. The rally was held just days before the first anniversary of the white supremacist takeover of Charlottesville, Virginia, where Heather Heyer was killed by one of the right-wing protesters. On tomorrow's show, our news correspondent Arun Gupta will give us a detailed report of the Portland rally. Also on Saturday, groups involved in the March for Our Lives mobilized for actions against the National Rifle Association, or NRA. The main march on the NRA took place outside NRA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. Here's one of the organizers speaking at the rally.
My name is Michaela Latimer. I'm from Columbia, Maryland, and I was one of the organizers for this event today. Our movement that calls to end gun violence and that demands common sense gun reform is the ultimate act of American patriotism.
Yes.
This is vital not only to protect our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but to safeguard our democracy against the dark and undue influence of the gun lobby. So while I am in this fight as a Latina, as a revolutionary, or a progressive, I am in this movement as an American patriot.
Yes.
Esta nación respira el oxígeno que la promesa de la libertad y ahora las personas se están asfixiando. This nation breathes the oxygen that is the promise of liberty and right now our people are suffocating. We are not free when gunshots pierce classrooms. We are not free when the people are criminalized just for being black or brown. We are not free when gun violence in Atlanta, Chicago, St. Louis, Baltimore, and Detroit goes ignored.
Yes.
That's one of the organizers of the National March on the NRA that took place in Fairfax, Virginia on Saturday. There were smaller marches in cities around the country as well, calling for gun control. Many activists marked what would have been the 18th birthday of a young man named Joaquin Oliver, killed at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. His parents, Manuel and Patricia Oliver, said, "We don't want thoughts. We don't want prayers. We want change." One of California's large wildfires got even larger over the weekend as a new heat wave hits on Monday. The Mendocino Complex fire in Northern California doubled in size as it has burned through 250,000 acres to become the largest blaze that firefighters are now battling. It is also now considered the fourth largest fire in California's history. The Carr Fire in Shasta County, which continues to burn, claimed a seventh victim on Saturday when an employee of Pacific Gas and Electric Company was working to restore power to survivors' homes. President Trump approved federal funds for California to battle fires in response to Governor Jerry Brown's request. But in a tweet on Sunday, Trump blamed the state's environmental laws instead of climate change for the ferocity of the fires. "California wildfires are being magnified and made so much worse by the bad environmental laws, which aren't allowing massive amounts of readily available water to be properly utilized," said the president. Global warming is not just hitting California and the U.S. hard. A severe heat wave in Europe is also fueling wildfires. Firefighters in Portugal battled a raging blaze that threatened to overwhelm a town on the country's south coast. French authorities have shut down 4 nuclear reactors in response to the immense heat. Sweden and Norway are also battling far hotter summers than before. In other international news, nearly 100 people are feared dead in Indonesia as a massive earthquake hit the resort island of Lombok late on Sunday evening. More than 200 people have suffered injuries. Just a week ago, a small earthquake hit nearby and killed 16 people. Search and rescue operations are underway to find missing people. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has survived a drone attack, said government officials on Sunday. According to Associated Press, the assailants flew 2 drones, each packed with 1 kilogram of C4 plastic explosive, toward Maduro, his wife, and other top leaders as he spoke Saturday evening at an event. And that, quote, "a little-known group calling itself Soldiers in T-shirts claimed responsibility for the attack, saying it planned to fly 2 drones loaded with explosives at the president, but soldiers shot them down. So far, 6 people have been arrested in connection to the attempted assassination. Mr. Maduro also blamed the U.S. for supporting opposition groups against him. On Sunday, Trump's national security advisor John Bolton said on Fox News, "If the government of Venezuela has hard information that they want to present to us that would show a potential violation of U.S. criminal law, we'll take a serious look at it." The Trump administration has revived sanctions against Iran as part of its unraveling of the carefully crafted nuclear agreement between the U.S. and Iran under President Obama. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo remarked that, quote, "we're hopeful that we can find a way to move forward, but it's going to require enormous change on part of the Iranian regime." He added, without irony, "they've got to behave like a normal country. That's the ask. It's pretty simple." On Monday, the first set of sanctions go into effect, covering such industries as auto manufacturing and metals. Then in November, Iran's oil and banking industries will be hit by U.S. sanctions. And that does it for today's headlines.